Blog Talk Radio.
Well, sorry about that, everybody. Well, a little bit of an internet problem, but luckily we haven't had one of those in like in almost a year. But we are on and doing all right. 98 degree day in beautiful, beautiful downtown, or I should say uptown New York City. How was your weekend, Mr. Palmer?
Weekend was good. A hot day here in New York. A little bit of humidity going on and no end in sight until this weekend, but good weekend. I think you could say the same. We both spent the weekend in Club Getaway in beautiful Kent, Connecticut, where Saturday was a little bit of a drizzle, but Sunday, not so much, a beautiful day. And I'm actually still recovering from my sunburn, which I didn't believe I was going to get. But here we are, a Tuesday afternoon in New York City. And the Major League Baseball All-Star Game goes on tonight. But more, I'd like to touch upon this first. Forbes magazine comes out every single year with the top 50 most valued franchises. And generally, Manchester United is number one. This year, they're actually number two. There are a couple of soccer teams in there. But what I found amazing and a credit to the NFL and a credit to Pete Rozelle more than anybody else, and Wellington Mara and Art Rooney and all those, I guess you call them the forefathers, is every single one of the NFL teams is in the top 52 teams of value. I find that absolutely incredible and a testament to what they did back in the 50s when they decided to divide the pie. Unlike the George Steinbrenners, there are not the, unlike every other sport, and Seth, we'll get into this more when we start talking about the NBA later, there are not in football the haves and the have-nots. And as far as value of your franchises, there are only the haves.
Yeah. Part of it is you've had teams that were in some financial trouble. Jacksonville, for one, was taken over by a multi-billionaire in Khan. Charlotte's had some problems. But for the most part, yeah, it's the most – it's not a surprise – it's not really a it's a shock that out of 50 teams – sorry, it sounds like there's some echo. Are you hearing as well?
I am not hearing any echo, no.
Okay. I'm surprised that they're in the top 50. I thought there would be more soccer teams. I didn't go through the list. I can take a wild guess and say either Real Madrid or Barcelona would be number one.
Yeah, Barcelona is number one. There are eight soccer teams, I believe. There are two Formula One teams. There are four baseball teams, the Yankees, the Mets, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, and the Cubs, I'm sorry. And maybe there are six. And the rest of them are football. And like I said before, it doesn't matter if the team is going through an issue as far as capital. The team is worth because they have the national TV deal, which is split evenly 32 ways. That's where the value is in the NFL as opposed to the NBA or the Major League Baseball, where they don't do revenue sharing the same way. There is some form of it, but in no way, shape, or form what even Steven is. You would never think, and we'll move on to the NBA because we're talking about the haves and the have-nots. You got the New Jersey Brooklyn Nets, who are owned by a $15 billion man, and then you have clubs such as, and I will, I don't know, even the Charlotte Bobcats. Michael Jordan's a millionaire, but he's not a bazillionaire. He's not $15 billion rich. I don't even think he has $1 billion. And granted, we're talking in millions and billions to the normal customer. That's like nothing. But anyway, the fact is you have the haves and the have-nots in the NBA. You certainly have the haves and the have-nots in Major League Baseball. And I have to say the two sports that are most evenly keeled for parity are football and hockey, which kind of surprises you, but it's true. The two sports that have a hard salary cap.
Yeah, but when I think of hockey, I don't really think of high revenue. You have no TV contract. You have no, you're bringing 12,000 people per game. I think that may be the flat cap may be the only thing that is equal to football.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is that you have the Mike Ilitches of the world that own Domino's Pizzeria and thus the Detroit Tigers, and because he owns the Detroit Tigers, he has $150 million salary, $150 million in salaries. You have guys that can afford it. You have the James Dolans of the world in the NHL and in the NBA. And in the NBA, he can spend a gazillion dollars. But in the NHL, he can only spend X amount of dollars. It's a hard cap. It makes the parity there, and it makes it – you don't have the has and the have-nots to
degree.
Not even close.
I apologize. I misunderstood where you were going with this. Yeah. Anything with a flat cap, you're going to have that. Because on a given salary, discrepancy of $7 to $10 million is one thing. A salary discrepancy of $170 million is another in baseball.
Absolutely.
But ironically, in baseball, even with those huge salary discrepancies, the quote unquote have nots have done quite well.
Agreed. Because I think that when you come to baseball, you're one out of 25 people. It's not you don't make as much of an influence as a basketball team. And I'd say the same thing in football, aside from the quarterback who has the ball every single play, at least on offense. In baseball, you don't have a guy, even if you put the Mike Trout on the Mets right now, and granted, Mike Trout, I believe, is the best all-around player in both leagues. If you put him on the Mets, he's not going to make the Mets an amazing team. He's going to improve them, but he will not improve them dramatically.
Yeah,
while if you take somebody in basketball, or you take a quarterback in football, or you take a center iceman in hockey, where they're touching the puck or touching the ball 20% of the time or 30% of the time, that's going to make a great deal of influence.
Yeah, baseball, more than any other sport, cannot be dominated by one person over an extended period of time. When you think of a great pitcher, a Verlander, a Kershaw, a Randy Johnson, they're involved in one out of every five games. You know, great baseball hitter still fails 7 out of 10. So it is pretty difficult for one person to have that kind of domination in baseball. I agree.
Absolutely. And speaking of the haves versus the have-nots, speaking of the Knicks, the Nets, I mean, Queensbridge, I believe he calls it, World Meta Peace coming to the Big Apple. Your thoughts?
I think it's a great move for the Knicks. I'm not, you know, if you can get a player of his caliber for $1.6 million, why not? I think it makes sense. I'm not sure it moves anything.
The big move that might have moved something is Andre Kirilenko going to the Nets.
Well, that's a little bit different. The Knicks, to me, even getting our test, are probably the number five team, are kind of stuck in the preseason predictions at number five. Our test is a nice player, a little bit past his prime. If he can go back and if he was a player of 3 years ago, that would be one thing. But at this point, he's a good role player. He can kind of be the 2-3 swing, whether he's a six man coming off the bench. I mean, he's obviously more of a three than a two. He doesn't have the speed at this point in his career. I mean, he can still guard an occasional two, but Anthony is your three. I don't know how to read the Knicks. There is a lot of disjointed place pieces, and actually a friend of mine, I had written something a couple of days ago in regards to the signing, and Matt Matros, actually a World Series of Poker champion, responded pretty much calling me out, and absolutely correct in doing so, that it's too early to figure out how this team works. And there are have been teams with lower talent, the Mavs of a couple of years ago, the Sixers 10 years back, the Pistons, that have won titles with lesser talent. I don't quite see the cohesiveness there.
I think this is a tremendous basketball move. Now, given what, and we will call him Ron Artest on this show because that's who he is. So, given what Ron Artest is a three that can defend, which is what the Knicks really need is defensive players. I mean, they have next to nobody that can defend on the team. That's number one. So he can take the number one guy. Now, nobody's going to stop LeBron James. We know this. But Artest is 6'6", 210, 220. I mean, he can defend him as well as just about anybody if you're going to take him. He can defend the number one option on most teams. And more importantly, that's what the Knicks need because that frees up Carmelo to spend his energy on the offensive side, which is where he's best. He's not a great defensive player, we know this. But even more importantly, it allows the Knicks to play Carmelo at the four, which is where he was most effective last year. So before this, before the Ron Artest acquisition, the Knicks got Andre Bargnani, who this still boggles my mind. And you and I have discussed this off the air. The Knicks seem to always try and always seem to bail out teams that have hard times getting rid of players. And instead of just getting them, the Knicks seem to just pay overboard for them. And I go back to the Eddie Curry situation, and I don't even remember what year it is anymore. It's so long ago. But for those that do not recall, Eddie Curry was playing with the Bulls, and he had a heart condition. He had, I think it was an arrhythmia in his heart. So there was no way that the Bulls were going to keep Eddie Curry. And everybody in the NBA knew this. Everybody. This was one of the worst-kept secrets in the NBA. Eddie Curry was out of shape. He had a heart condition, and the Bulls were not going to re-sign him. So the Knicks come and say, okay, we'll take him. And for a basketball move, that's a good move. Granted, what we know about Eddie Curry now, but back in the day. It's a good move. So what did the Knicks do? The Knicks gave up a first-round pick, which, all right, you can say that's okay. He was 22 years old. He was 23. He was supposed to be a burgeoning talent. Okay. Not only did they give up a number one pick, but they give up the opportunity to swap number one picks in the next draft. So not only a number one, but the ability to swap in the next draft. And then decide to give this guy, who is out of shape, has a heart condition, and nobody else wants, a 6-year, $60 million contract. What the hell is wrong with the Knicks? So this time, you have Andre Bargnani, the former number one pick. Wow, that sounds surprisingly close to what Eddie Curry was. I believe Eddie Curry was the three, right? Eddie Curry was the three. Chandler was the two.
Oh, am I allowed to talk? I fell asleep about halfway through your monologue.
Sorry.
That's okay. I think that may have been the record for the longest individual speech when we haven't hosted individually. That was pretty good. I actually kind of lost track. I think Chandler was two. I think Curry was four, if I remember correctly.
Okay. So they have Eddie Curry. So Bargnani is the number one pick overall. He is an amnesty candidate this year from the Raptors. Everybody in the NBA knows he wants to be gone, and that the Raptors want to deal him. And of course, here come the Knicks, and decide to give up Steve Novak. Fine, no problem. Bargnani's got a two years left on his contract, $11 million. Steve Novak, no problem. That's a 4-year deal. Marcus Camby, again, no problem. It's a 3-year deal. But, of course, the Knicks decide nobody else wants this guy, so let's just give up another number one pick. I repeat, what the hell is wrong with the Knicks? Okay, I'm done.
7 minutes, 19 seconds. Well done.
And really? That I couldn't have gone on for 7 minutes. No.
That's fine.
Not without a glass of water.
Now, actually, I've heard you go on a lot longer than that. You are correct in regards that Melo at this point is more of a four than a three, the way he plays on the offensive end. He's not a running gunner. He's a stat, you know, let them pretty much stagnate into a half-card offense and, you know, let him play one on five. And he's very good at it. I also concur that, yeah, you know, for the $1.6 million that they paid for him, I think that was the number. You know, I think it's a great deal. I think it's as good as you could get. Unfortunately, the shooting guard, who you decided to re-sign for $6.5 million a year for 4 years, is now out for the next 4 months. And he may be back for the beginning of the season. He may not be. The team has talent. I don't know if they're better than the top-tier teams in the East.
Well, we talked about this last year, that it was really important for the Nets to win the division. In our NBA preview that we talked last year, we predicted wrongly, but we said that it was incredibly important for the Nets to win the division. I think it's incredibly important for the Knicks to win this division. And I don't think it's because of anything with the Nets. I think it's the fact that when you get right down to it, the three division winners get the top three seeds. So if the Knicks win the division, they'll probably be the three seed, maybe the two, but probably the three. If they come in second in the division, they could be the six or seven and have to play Indiana or Miami or perhaps the Nets in the first round and no home court advantage. I think, we'll talk about this over the next couple of months, but I think it's very important for the Knicks to win that division.
I think it's more important for the Knicks than the Nets. You look at the veterans now on the Nets. The Nets, I think, got the steal of free agency, picking up Andre Kirilenko for $3 million. You know, with the veterans of Terry and Pierce and Garnett, and you have veteran experience as well with Darren Williams and Joe Johnson. I don't really think that the home court is going to be that significant for the Nets, or it's more significant. It's less significant for them than for other teams or younger teams like the Bulls or the Pacers. But I think the Knicks have done the best that they can from a bad position. You know, Bargnani's not going to. I don't think he's not going to win you a title, but it is another additional offensive threat. It's a question of, do you have the point guard to lead you that far in Felton? Can J.R. Smith, now that he's not playing for a contract, really continue his play during the regular season of last year? And most importantly, I mean, also, can Amari contribute in any capacity? And can Carmelo become more of the player that he needs to be, as opposed to the great scorer, the overall player, to lead this team further? And I don't know.
Absolutely agree. I mean, in other news that happened this week, it looks like Joe Dumars, 5 years later, said, oops, let me get back the guy that made my championship teams. And Chauncey Billups has returned to Detroit and says today that he thinks he's going to start. Right, exactly. 38 years old. I think he's 38, maybe 36. 36 years old. The rest of the team combined has as much experience as he does. I think, you know what, it's interesting because if he can start, and physically he can start, Brandon Knight coming off the bench as a six-man is not a bad idea. Or Stuckey coming off the bench, not a bad idea. Now, Chauncey Billups hasn't started for a team in 3 years. So the question is, can he physically hold up after going through that Achilles injury for the Clippers and then 2 years ago, then last year suffering from injury after injury. I'm just going to use another word so it didn't come out. So interesting stuff coming out of Detroit. And if you're Chauncey Billups, I don't know. I suffered through a really hard year with the Clippers. The Clippers get better, and I get to go to Detroit. I don't call that one of my best moves. But whatever. I mean, he'll make his $2.5 million, and he'll suffer. I wish we could all suffer so well for $2.5 million and playing a game.
You mean you're not making $2.5 million at IPC?
No, you know what? My boss denied my raise to $2.5 million. I asked him for it a couple of weeks ago, and he looked at me and he basically just said, "You can get out now." So I don't think I'll be making $2.5 million anytime soon.
My boss actually did offer me that much.
That's fantastic. Did he take all the taxes out too and just give them back?
Yeah,
to you?
It left me. It knocked out about $2.4 million, but that's okay.
Right, exactly. If you'd like to talk about your salary or our salaries or any NBA salaries, we do have confidentiality on the program as far as it goes to Blog Talk Radio. 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. We have Seth's favorite topic, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, which we will be discussing. Johnny Football. I think we have to touch upon that. We should probably touch upon that first before we get on to my favorite topic, the MLB All-Star Game. But Johnny Football, 20 years old, supposedly gets kicked out of the Peyton Manning or Manning quarterback camp because he was partying too much. And he came the next morning, this is according to reports, and he never made it to the practice. And he was a counselor there, so he never made it to the practice of the lineup. And Manning sent him home. I don't have a problem with anything that happened in this. The only problem I have is that Manziel supposedly lied about it.
There seems to be a variety of views on what Manziel did. According to Manziel's side, he wasn't feeling well and came home. According to Manning, they didn't have an issue with it. Nobody really knows.
Well, let's take the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is he was out partying. He was hungover. He missed his assignment at camp, and the Manning sent him home. Right? Worst case scenario.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I don't have a problem with any of that. I don't have a problem with him partying. I don't have a problem with him staying out all night. He's 20 years old. I don't have a problem with him being hungover, other than the fact that it's against the law to drink when you're 20. I don't have a problem with the Manning sending him home. I don't have a problem with any of it. I think that this is a little bit blown out of proportion.
Of course.
Because, quite frankly, Seth, if you and I, and you had a boss that wasn't named Seth Kamens, if you came into work and you were hungover and you missed the first three meetings of your morning, chances are your boss would send you home too.
Yeah,
with
a box of all my stuff. Yeah.
Right, but that's what
I don't have.
Didn't he?
Yeah. I don't honestly have a major problem with it either. The problem is it's a dead time in sports, and I think that they're trying to find something to talk about, and this is what they got. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Because I was listening to Mike Golic on Mike and Mike this morning, and I don't listen to them often because I'm actually working, but I enjoy listening to them. And Golic is an offensive lineman. He has two sons that were offensive linemen, and he says, "I've been to many an offensive lineman camp where guys have come in hungover, and they were sent home, but their name wasn't Johnny Manziel."
Right.
That's the difference. Now, do you think because he's a Heisman Trophy winner, he has a greater responsibility to not be doing this?
He does. but he's also
you
a
do.
Kid.
You believe that he does. You believe that that trumps the fact that he's 20 years old.
I believe, unfortunately for him, it's the responsibility that comes with it. So.
Okay. Now, why is it a responsibility that comes with it? I mean, he's still 20 years old.
When you I understand that, but when you win the biggest award in college football and you get all the accolades and everything that comes with it, there is a responsibility, and not that you asked for it.
Well, do you think that should be put on the list? I mean, if you win the Heisman, you have this, and this. I mean, I guess my point is, A, and I've said this before, he's 20. We all made mistakes when we were 20. We all got reprimanded or whatever when we were 20, and we all lived with it, and we moved on. Unfortunately for him, this is where it's going. And granted,
I don't think what he's done has really been that bad. I think people have blown it completely out of proportion. I think he acted like a 20-year-old. The problem is when you win awards of this magnitude, you get the spotlight that comes with it.
Agreed.
Not saying it's fair, just saying it's reality.
Okay. And you think that this will affect his status next year when he comes out? Because I believe this is last year in college football. Because
I agree.
Him, I'm saying there is no way I want to deal with this anymore.
I think everything will be contingent on his year next year. I'm not expecting him to have the same caliber of year, but if he's in the ballpark, then he'll be fine. Excuse me. It's not.
He had a long day
really
sitting on his couch, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a hard knock life.
My God, did you really just quote Annie?
Well, you've quoted every other movie, so yeah, why not? Actually, the core I was quoting. I thought it was Jay-Z. It's a hard knock life.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, now that my co-host has quoted Annie, we can name that as one of our favorite movies. Anyway.
I've actually never seen the movie.
Have you seen the show?
Nope.
Wow. If you are like Mr. Kamens and have not seen Annie, please give us a call. 760-283-0846. Because I'd really like to know if there are other people that haven't. Because it just doesn't seem
funny.
Like... Oh, I mean, really. And if you're a woman and would like Seth to take you to see Annie, I would actually appreciate that happening. Because I think that is an educational value that he needs to have. And then we get him a date. So there you go. Perfect. You kill two birds with one stone, don't you?
Yeah, that's the problem I'm having. That's my dating problem.
Ladies and gentlemen,
anyway.
If you're 5'8" to 5'10", no, we're not going to go on this. And you're single and you want to date me, please give us a call at
760-283-0846. Please date Sean. Please date Sean. We're begging you, people.
Wow,
he's a successful,
it's a begging contest.
For the love of God.
I don't beg. I'm not a beggar. I'm really not. But, okay. Anyway, so we decided that Johnny Manziel is 20 years old, and while not really deserving of this, he's getting it because he was the Heisman Trophy winner. Correct? That's where we're coming down on it? Okay, now... You fully believe that if this was 20 years ago, we never would have heard about this, right?
Not a chance.
That's what I thought. I mean, I think the concept of internet and Twitter and Vine, which is something I just learned what it is. I really am getting old. Do you know what Vine is?
What is?
A Vine. And I don't mean like a grapevine, like a Vine in regards to the internet.
No.
A Vine is an 8-second video. That's what it is. And all the kids are doing it.
Why?
Because it allows, and I believe that because it's like a snapshot of your life. It's like Twitter on video. You got 8 seconds. Now, I believe I can tell my life in 8 seconds. I can just sit on the couch and take 8 seconds worth of video. I'm good.
So tell me your life in 8 seconds.
My life in 8 seconds. No. That's what video is for, because a picture speaks 1,000 words.
See, luckily for you have a face for video. I have a voice for radio and a face for radio. So nobody wants to see an eight-second video of me.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to see a Vine of Seth, we'll be happy to put it up on the Facebook page. Just let
this
us
show
know.
Is going downhill real fast.
It is, but we're happy to move on with our guests and our listeners as to what they desire. So if you'd like a Vine of either Seth or myself, or both, give us a call, send us an email. We'll be happy to put it up on the Facebook page. This is not one of our better shows, ladies and gentlemen. We self-admittedly talked about that. But let's talk about a little bit of sports, because I think that's what people tune in for. And Major League Baseball All-Star Game last night, home run hitting contest. I saw some posts from you on Facebook, one which said that you were very impressed by the reception of David Wright got.
I was. I thought, you know what it is? I thought...
No, I have no idea. That's why I asked.
You know what? David Wright...
No, I have no idea.
David Wright...
Aw, come on. Smile. It's a good day.
It's a good day?
What are your thoughts?
Because Matt Harvey is pitching the All-Star game?
What?
I said, why is it a good day?
It's just a good day. It's a good day. You know what? It's just a good day. I haven't heard that there's no Columbine today. I haven't heard a terrorist attack occurring today. I haven't heard I'm not sick. It's a good day. Because there should be more good days in the world. So today is a good day. So let's say, why were you impressed? You were impressed that David Wright got a standing ovation last night. I thought it was wonderful that the Citi Field fans showed him some support.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who came back to a team not going anywhere, hadn't been anywhere for several years, not going anywhere for the next two or three, could have gone to any team outside of probably Tampa Bay and Baltimore, would have been happy to have him. And, you know, the Mets have been below the negative. I mean, excuse me, below the Mets. The only thing that people have thought about in regards to the Mets is the Wilpons in regards to Bernie Madoff over the last 3 or 4 years. They've been completely irrelevant at best. And it's nice to see someone who's potentially having a Hall of Fame career get some national credit. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, a buddy of mine at work today was discussing him and whether he's on the same trajectory as a Robinson Cano. Is there? They're both about the same age. I think they actually are the same age. Cano was going to be a free agent. Wright was going to be a free agent, re-signed, and whether David Wright has about 1,600 hits right now, he averages about 165 a year. So he'd have to play another 8 or 9 years to get 3,000. I think he's going to get there. And he will by far demolish every record that the Mets have, hitting-wise. Hits, I think he already has the doubles, RBIs, and runs. I think the only thing he doesn't have is homers at this point. I think he has RBIs, too. He is a class act. You never see him with a downer on his face. He's never gotten into trouble. He's the equivalent of what Derek Jeter is to the Yankees. And there's a reason why, even as a Mets fan and Mets fans in general, or Red Sox fans in general, respect Derek Jeter. And I think the same thing applies to David Wright.
Yeah. We have a request, actually, from one of our favorite listeners, Jessica from New York, formerly of Baltimore. And she said, I said, because we're kind of dying right now. As we said, we apologize. This has not been one of our better shows. She says, talk about the Orioles or the Ravens. Always a crowd pleaser. Is there anything to really talk about in regards to the Orioles or the Ravens?
we'd be happy to talk about the Orioles. The Orioles have who I consider the best third baseman outside of Miguel Cabrera in the American League, and probably the third best third baseman overall in Manny Machado. And this is why when you said that David Wright couldn't have gone to the Orioles, I think he actually could have. Machado would have moved back to his shortstop position, which is where he was drafted. Manny Machado has made probably the best third. YouTube Manny Machado for fielding. I mean, this guy made the best play I think I've ever seen from third base outside of Brooks Robinson, another Oriole. The Orioles have some good talent coming in. Chris Davis, if you saw him last night, crushed Davis. 37 home runs at the break. Absolutely incredible on a pace for Roger Maris. Adam Jones. The Orioles have five All-Stars. They may be the five most innocuous All-Stars you can possibly think about, but they have them. And this is the first time that they've had five All-Stars, I think, since Cal Ripken. So well done, Baltimore. Well done to Jim Duquette, who's their GM. And well done, Peter Angelos, for sticking the hell out of their business. Because for the first 10 years that Peter Angelos owned the club, he was involved in every decision, which is why Davey Johnson was let go. I think that he has decided to stay out of the baseball business and look at what they're doing. They could use some pitching, but outside of that, I think that they are primed for a run in the second half.
Well, it's an interesting division. Boston has obviously been in control, which has shocked everybody. The Yankees are five or six games out, I forget which, but they're kind of holding on bated breath. I mean, we're waiting for the major collapse to come. I mean, the Yankee team is so devastated by injury, there really is no way for them to continue. But the Rays are three out. The Orioles are five out. It should be an interesting run. It should be an interesting division. An interesting divisional race.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Seth. When did the Midsummer Classic? And when you talk about Midsummer, the Orioles have played 97 games. That's a long way from mid. Mid is like 81. So they're like 3 weeks past the mid. So I find it kind of interesting when there are people are saying on the internet and on the radio and TV where Chris Davis has 37 homers and it's the most of the All-Star break combined with Reggie Jackson. Yet Reggie Jackson did it in about 80 games and Chris Davis has done it in 97. Another stat that really holds very little to no water. But Chris Davis has certainly come on strong, and that team is definitely looking like it's primed for a run, along with the Tampa Bay Rays. You're right, that division is absolutely stacked from top to bottom, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays make a run too, especially since they're looking at acquiring Matt Garza, from what I understand. And
yeah, but they are 11 back.
They're all in. That team is all in.
But 11 and a half back, pretty five games out into the cellar, that's a pretty tough run.
Yeah, I agree. What are they as far as the wild card, though? Because remember, there are two wild cards now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're only like five or six out of one of the wild cards. Do you have that stat available? I do not have a computer
I
open.
I'm in the midst of bringing it up right now. They're eight and a half out.
Eight and a half. Okay. I mean, it's doable. I wouldn't say it's... Remember, 2 years ago, the Devil Rays. Man, I can't get that out of my head. The Rays came back from, I think it was like 10 or 11 down in September. The Phillies came back and... Or the Braves... No, the Phillies came back and beat
no.
the Mets from like six down in September. I mean, it's possible. I wouldn't say it's likely... But remember also that all these teams, especially in the AL East, are going to be playing each other over the next 3 months. So if those are the teams that you're trying to jump, well, guess what? You're playing them. So your opportunity is there. And Toronto is finally getting healthy. I mean, it just took half the season to do it. But they do have the bats, and I think that is an extremely competitive division. It'll be really interesting to see what happens in the Central, though, to me. The Indians are holding on by the skin of their teeth. I think they're 2.5 out. The Tigers are what the Tigers are. Do the White Sox have a fire sale? Does Kansas City come back and actually make a run at this? I mean, that to me is a very interesting division. I know I'm missing a team. I can't remember who I'm missing.
You're missing the Twins, which is kind of they're kind of meaningless, which is why you're missing them.
Excellent. There you go. There ain't no little big league coming down the pike.
So I guess going to the West, you have the biggest disappointment in baseball in the Angels, and then you have a two-team race between Oakland and Texas.
Yeah, and Oakland, I think now is a good time as any to talk about Yvany Cepedes and the show that he put on last night. That was quite impressive for a guy from two years ago. He was defecting from Cuba. He put on a brilliant show at Citi Field last night.
He was hitting the ball. It was reminiscent of the Josh Hamilton shots a few years ago at Yankee Stadium. These were not 385-foot home runs. These were 500-foot blasts.
Yeah, I mean, he showed why he was there. He was not an all-star. And it brings me to a point that I'd like to make. I really believe that the home run hitting contest, aside from the guys that are hosting the thing, like Dick Canoes and the David Wrights, those guys should not be all-stars. Let other people do this. Let the Cepedeses of the world. I would love to have seen back in the day Rob Deere doing this. Or Gorman Thomas, right. The guys that, or for me, the prototypical guy right now is Mark Trumbo, who did it a couple of years ago.
And I was going to say Mark. How about Mark Reynolds?
Or Mark Reynolds, right. These guys. Because these guys are all or nothing, and they got a lot of power to go. So, I mean, those are the guys I'd love to see. I think having a guy last night in Cepedes who was not an all-star but won the thing will give rise to more people like that. I think I'd like to see that a little bit more. But those were shots, and I think the fact that he plays in Oakland means that we don't hear about him as much if you're not a fantasy player. And he's having a down year. The ironic thing was he hadn't homered in 81 at-bats going into last night. And then he did that. But he took that contest seriously because that's all he was there for. So good for him. Good for Oakland. Now, if they just get a ballpark that didn't have sewage running through it, that would be nice. But we'll see what happens. So moving over to the National League, we have the NL East, which is a total cluster garbage fest, with the Braves in first. The National – you want to talk about a disappointing team? I think it's between the Angels and the Nationals. Nationals are an incredible disappointment to me.
I think I think if I remember correctly, you had them winning between 105 and 110 games.
Absolutely. I did.
Yeah. I had them winning the division at about 95 or so. They have not even come close to living up to their capabilities. They are 6 games out behind Atlanta, who just never seems to disappear. Philly has made a nice run. It's going to be interesting to see what Philly does. Do they make a run? Are they a buyer or a seller at the playoffs? I mean, the reality is they're probably not a championship. They're not a championship caliber team, and they're probably not a playoff team. But it's hard to kind of turn away when you're three games out of the wild card.
Well, I agree with that too. The fact that they just lost Ryan Howard for 6 to 8 weeks doesn't help matters. But remember, for all those that are paying attention to this, the trade deadline is 15 days away. I mean, it's the non-waiver deadline. And in 2 weeks when this comes up, we'll talk about what the difference is, because I'm sure everybody wonders why you can then make trades after July 31st. There are rules around this, so we'll talk about it more at that point. We'll do our waiver schooling as we do every year. on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. So the fact is, I think that the Phillies will be sellers, but who do they have to sell? I mean, do they sell Cliff Lee?
And I don't know.
Who takes $25 million the next 2 years? I mean, the market is not there. Remember, the guys that they're selling have contracts that were signed 2 or 3 years ago before the market, for lack of a better term, corrected itself. So now the best pitcher in Major Leagues is probably, I mean, is Felix Hernandez, the best young pitcher, and he's earning less than 20. He's earning 25. Cliff Lee is going to be 35 and earning 25. Are you willing to pay him that for the next 2 years? I'm not sure how many teams could. I know the Dodgers could. I know the Yankees could. The Mets probably could. But the fact is, who's going to want to pay him that much? And are the Phillies going to have to eat some of that salad? The other guy go ahead.
Doesn't say the team that, you know, the team that would ring a bell, I guess, would be Texas. They're in the playoff hunt. They can certainly use another pitcher. But, you know, the Phillies suck with a lot of really bad contracts.
Yeah. Well, the worst contract that they have is probably the worst contract in baseball. I mean, and yes, I include A-Rod in this deal. I think the three worst contracts in baseball right now, there are two on the Yankees. One is A-Rod, which we all know what's going on with A-Rod. Number two is Mark Teixeira. And the reasoning is Mark Teixeira hasn't hit over 260 in the last 3 years, has $22.5 million left for the next 3 years. That is ridiculous amounts of money for a guy that's batting 260 at first base. So that's number two, and he's out probably the rest of this year. And number three is Ryan Howard, who is owed $25 million for the next 3 years in an extension they kicked in this year, and that guy hasn't had an OBP, which is on-base percentage, an OPS, not on-base percentage. So it's on-base percentage plus slugging of over 690 against lefties in 3 years. That's a problem. So if the Phillies are looking to trade, who do they trade? Cliff Lee or Chase Utley? That's all they got. I mean, you're right. They are in the pickle of do we give up or do we go for it? The problem is if they give up, they don't have much to trade to begin with. And what they do have to trade, they may have to eat some salary, and I'm not sure it's worth eating $5 million of Cliff Lee as opposed to just paying him the next 2 years. I just don't know.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm watching the pregame from the All-Star game. Who is Houston's representative?
I think it's Jose Altuve.
Mariano Rivera getting a standing ovation right now from the Mets crowd.
Is the guy 5'5"?
Yeah, but they stopped it pretty much. Yeah, they just let Rivera they gave Rivera about a 30-second ovation, which was quite nice.
Good for him. I mean, really good. Rivera, to me, is, and I'm going to turn it on right now as well. I didn't actually have it on. But Rivera, to me, is just like Jeter. He's a guy that every fan will respect. And I loved what Minnesota did. Did you see the gift that Minnesota gave him?
Didn't they give him a rocking chair or something like that?
Yeah, but
something
they gave him a rocking chair made of bats that he broke.
Nah.
That's a pretty cool gift. That's a pretty cool gift. I'm sorry I missed this. This is actually what's going on right now, the introduction, is my favorite part of the All-Star game. Because when I was a kid, my mom would record this on a VHS tape, and I'd come home, and it's, because baseball players you don't get to see all the time, especially when I was a kid and you didn't have cable. You didn't get to see what these baseball players look like. So this was the best part of the All-Star game to me, was watching these players get introduced. And a nice ovation for both Terry Collins and Davey Johnson at Citi Field for those
giving
that don't
him a huge
27 years ago. Davey Johnson led the Mets to a World Series. So good standing ovation for him as well. So looking back on last night, so you were impressed with Zepedes I was thoroughly impressed with Bryce Harper. I have no idea on how he does that with his. I mean, I've never seen somebody lift up the front foot and then lift up the back foot and still hit a home run 400 feet. And he's 20, as Chris Berman liked to remind us 75 times last night.
Wow. Yeah, well, it's Chris Berman. Things are what they are. I guess the difference was I expected it from Harper. I did not expect that power from Cepedes. So that was why it was so surprising to me. But yeah, the introductions are great. You have, because it's the people that you'll never hear from, you potentially will never hear from again. I forget the guy who's like Jim Morris from the rookie, the pitcher from Toronto who was a substitute teacher.
Oh, the Chevy. The guy from Toronto. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a great story that is.
Absolutely. 2 years ago out of baseball. Yeah, I mean, and Pittsburgh's got five guys too. I mean, they're introducing the Pirates right now, and they're just continuing the Pirates. They are the best story in the majors. There is no way that team will be less than 500 this year. None. But I said that last year too, so I guess I will.
Way to go out on that limb, Sean.
Here's Jose Altuve. There he is. No, that's not him. That's Cabrera. I love how they just went from a guy that was 6'6" to a guy that was 5'9". So we're going to wrap up a little bit.
There's one other thing. I want to talk about Mr. Kovacek. And this is more your domain than mine. Leaving the Devils for a $15 million a year contract in the KHL. Now, the annoyance is number one, they would have taken a good chance of re-signing Zach Parise last year if this had happened last year. And for the next 15 years, they will still be having a small salary cap issue with this. Plus, they would have made runs at free agents this year. Why did they have to wait till now?
Well, according to what I've read, Lou Lamoriello knew this was coming and actually was trying to convince him to stay. So Lou had this in the back of his mind that this was occurring. Now, this is interesting. Mike Trout just came out with the American flag. I'm not sure what he's planning on doing with that, but that's just an interesting sidebar. But you're right. Kobe and Robinson Cano getting a standing ovation as well from the Mets faithful. And you're right. Kobe basically screwed the Devils in no uncertain terms. It was not only did he cost them a first-round pick, he cost them $25 million over the first 3 years of his contract. Now they're going to cost them $250,000 on the cap for the next 15 years. Absolutely screwed him over. And he's making a ton more money. Now, what is interesting to me is he signed a four-year deal. First of all, if I'm the Devils, I never would have let him out of that contract. Because if they don't let him out of that contract, and here's Poppy's got an American flag too, so there's got to be something going on here. And so is Adam Jones. Are you watching this?
Yeah.
Yeah, they all have American flags. So this will be interesting. What was surprising was somebody didn't have them. Cano didn't have an American flag. I don't know why. But anyway, so if Lamoriello doesn't let him out of the contract, he can't play in the KHL and he can't play in the Olympics. So I have a question as to what Lou was probably doing. The contract is for four more years. And then, quite frankly, Kovacek can come back to the NHL as a free agent. Wouldn't that be something?
Yes, but my understanding is every single team would have to sign off on it. And I'm not sure that would happen.
Well, you know the Devils wouldn't. I think screw me once, shame on you. Screw me once, twice, shame on me. So, anyway. All right, so we got about 5 minutes to go. You got a prediction on the All-Star game? Or do you not even care?
Not even care. It matters only, I mean, it's so incredibly silly that it reflects that, you know, the winning team will have the home field advantage throughout in the World Series. I think that's ridiculous. So
I agree with you, but I do like how each of these guys seems to be scratching their balls before they come on the field. So that's
Don't you scratch your balls before you come on the show?
That's true, I do. It's a habit that I have to break. And Joey Votto is thoroughly enjoying this. But anyway, so I agree with you. I think that it's a travesty that this game counts because it's not even played like a real game. And David Wright's about to come out for the Mets, and he's getting a standing O as well.
I can actually hear the yells around my neighborhood, which is pretty cool for this.
Can you really? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. He is an absolute class act, and everybody – it's funny. If you didn't get to see Jimmy Fallon last night, I will post this on the
please,
website.
Everyone and their mother has seen the Matt Harvey.
Was that not one of the funniest things you've ever seen? I mean, that was kind of impressive. And that's why
it's also
I love
a sad
Matt
reflection. It's also a sad reflection.
But I think that's the point. He's a rookie. So, I mean, would you recognize David Wright? Probably. I mean, Matt Harvey's only been in the league 2 years. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you'd recognize Mariano Rivera on the street.
In a millisecond.
Really? I'd recognize Jeter. I'm not sure I'd recognize Rivera. I know I wouldn't recognize Mark Teixeira.
I probably would. I'm curious to hear the ovation now for Harvey coming on.
Yeah. Well, with that, we will say our goodbyes here at the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. I believe that the National League will win this 6-4 tonight. 6-4. That is my prediction. Seth, do you have a prediction at all?
My prediction is the sun will rise again tomorrow, and it'll be 95 freaking degrees. That's my prediction.
For Seth Kamens, right. This has been Sean Palmer. Thank you, Jess Finks, for the nice little hit over in Baltimore. And we will see you next week, 760-283-0846 next week. Seth and Sean Sports Radio, if you want to see a Vine, let us know. Talk to you later. See ya.
Goodbye, and we're sorry. We'll do better next time. Have a good week, everybody.